Hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Dying. So I'm delighted to be back again talking to Hazel Cooper, who I've spoken to before, and that was about the death of her husband in 23. I do remember, Hazel, then you were sad and upset and you were talking about looking for answers, and I think that was all to do with the subject of death and dying, wasn't it? But I've come back today and I'm very happy to see you again, but I'm sad that it's in sad circumstances and that you've been given a diagnosis, a terminal diagnosis. Now.
The last time I spoke to you, what I'd been looking for was a way to be with my husband and accompanying him on his journey. I don't think I ever really managed to do that. I was with him probably every day, but if not every day, nearly every day. And so we've got three boys, and they would take it in turns. And at night, one of them would always be with him, which was terrific, because he was in the hospital at the time. It's what they call palliative care. And I don't like it. The more I think about it, the less I like it. Because you seem to be just taking away food and water. We had the big meeting with all the family, but he wasn't there. So the boys were there, I was there, the nurses and doctors were there. But no one seemed to have thought of inviting him. I can't remember at this stage how conscious he was and whether he could have taken part. So maybe that was part of what came into the mix. I'm not sure. But at the time, I wanted to help him. And all I seemed to be able to do was to sit with him and hold his hand and hope that's what he wanted. He wasn't really religious until you look at his funeral. And he did a most beautiful funeral. And I don't know, I think we did count, the word love came into it a huge number of times, a dozen at least. And occasions of love. He'd been very struck by a television program in which it was a play about Jesus, and Jesus was with his disciples, and he'd said to them, "Love your enemies." And they all looked at each other and said, "What? What are you talking about? Love your enemies? That's ridiculous." And then he sort of went on to explain how important love was. And to love your enemies was a huge importance. And I know now that I'm probably mixing this all up with my own faith. I am a practicing Catholic, and I draw great strength from that. As I know, love is God, and God is love. And he gives us so much, because God is unable to stop giving. You think he can do everything, but he can't stop giving, and he can't stop loving. And if you can get hold of that, it's such a comfort. I mean, no, I've been told I shall die. Maybe this month, maybe next year. Maybe I've got even longer. I have no idea. And they'll never tell you, because they'll always get it wrong. But it's the one thing in life you can be sure about. There is a beginning and there is an end. And possibly, because my own father was killed during the war, I did know about death from quite a young age. And actually, I think that's throughout my life has been a huge help. And it sounds macabre to say I've been very grateful for that. But I have. I suppose it's matured me. But of course, it's been part of my life for 80, how old am I? 89, so 87 years.
So you're saying that your very, very early experience of grief and loss has kind of helped prepare you throughout the rest of your life? Is that what you're saying?
I am, yes. I think it's something we're missing in this day and age. Because you might be told, oh, so-and-so's died. And that's possibly the only words you'll hear about so-and-so. And then you'll go to the funeral and you'll pray for them if you're the praying sort. But we don't talk about people dying. I remember Rabbi Julia Neuberger. She was saying that she thought it was partly to do with the First World War. So many people didn't come back. And they developed a huge number of euphemisms, you know, kicked the bucket, popped his clogs, and all those sort of things. So they didn't actually say dead and dying. And now people are starting to say passing, which actually drives me mad. Because no one's passing except one going from the left to the right past the house. That's passing. But there you go. That's one of my little niggles.
So this is why you were happy to talk to me, is it? I mean, I think it's very brave of you to be prepared to talk about your upcoming own death. But is this why? Because you think we should be talking about it more?
I think we should acknowledge that it's going to happen. And that it does happen. And it even happens to people who are quite young and seemingly fit and healthy. But the first thing I did was ring the family. And I remember saying to them, look, it's bad news, I'm afraid, but I don't want you to cry. It's as it is. They've told me that they can't do anything for me. I don't think they actually promised to keep me comfortable. I hope so, anyway. And I wanted to be upfront with them, to make them realise that it was natural and that it happens to everyone. And it's part of living. This is why you're calling it living with dying, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we talk far too little about it. As we all know and probably acknowledge, but we don't do anything about that.
So has this given you an opportunity to talk about it more with your family?
Yes. I've talked a lot to them. And they've been absolutely wonderful. I'm so blessed with them. I've got one son living at home with me and he looks after me. And usually if he's not here, he swaps as one of the other boys. And this week I've been very blessed because the middle son actually managed to come up from his very onerous caring job with his stepson. And he spent 3 whole days with me, which was wonderful. So he was taking on all the caring duties. obviously he wanted to spend some time with me. And I was so blessed to have some time with him, because we don't see him very often. He has a very, very disabled young man that he and his partner look after. And he's 21 now. And they do such a fantastic job. And I'm so proud of them. They wear themselves to the ground. And not everyone could do it, I know that. The love that you can see between those three people is palpable. You really can almost touch it. And it's just so beautiful. And you think about all the aims and ambitions that people seem to need, to want, to have. But in the end, most important is love. And for me, it's God's love, which he gives to every one of us to share and to pass on. He's got so much that he can't help passing it on. And I find that reassuring. I find that beautiful.
So you've mentioned Brian, who I've met, and you've mentioned Peter, who I've met, but your third son...
Our eldest, Andy, he's the one who comes when Brian needs a break, or if he's going away. He's got a couple of days away with a friend or something like that. And he takes over from Brian. They've got it very well organised, I must admit. I'm lucky to have them.
So how have they all taken the news that you haven't got that much longer together?
They all seem to have taken it very well. It all seems to have been very positive. I remember when the doctor left, I was in a four-bedded ward, and all I could think of was, I must tell the family. And you've got the curtains round your bed, so you've got that wrong feeling of being private, of course. You think you're private, but you know everyone can hear you. And I was ringing them up and saying, now, please, this is bad news, but it's inevitable, and I don't want you to cry and weep. I want you to be positive about it. I am 89. I mean, what can I do with the rest of my life? My husband is gone. If I want to go on holiday, I've got no one to go with, because he and I always went together. So... my purpose in life's gone. My love for my family will never go, please God. But I'm 89. I've had a wonderful life. I've got a wonderful family. I've been so very blessed. And I can't ask for more. I mean, I'll never rule the country, just as well for the country, probably. But... I've had wonderful friends, wonderful family. And I think that's all you can ask for.
You sound very accepting.
I think Dad dying when I was 7 has made a huge difference. I know it sounds silly, but I think I was lucky in some ways. And I feel sad that we don't meet death these days. We don't talk about it. We don't welcome it. We don't realise it's coming even, which is ridiculous, because you've only got to take 2 seconds to think about it. Everyone dies. I might feel a bit different when I get a bit closer. I might feel more frightened. But I'm also blessed with a very strong faith. I get communion brought to me twice a week at the moment. And that is a huge blessing in itself. Oh, I've been so, so blessed. I don't think I could ask for anything more, quite honestly. I thought this sort of, you know, this is what happens next.
But because you've had this notice, which most of us don't get,
exactly,
or not everyone gets, and you've been able to talk to the family, what are the kinds of things do you think that you've said that you probably wouldn't have got round to saying otherwise? Would have come up.
The most important thing is to tell them how much I love them. Of course it is. And they've reciprocated beautifully. They've done all they can to help. And they help each other, which pleases me enormously. But I don't know how long it's going on for. Could be the end of the month, could be the end of the year, or even longer.
You did mention that you might be a bit frightened, or you weren't sure how you were going to feel when you got nearer the end. Do you think about that very much?
I wonder, it's a funny word that, isn't it, what it's going to feel like. I'm hoping it won't be painful. I can cope better with discomfort than pain. Jock and who else? I was there when my mother died. And I was there when another old lady I visited died. And they just were lying there. And you knew when they'd gone. Which is quite strange. There was a definite marker that suddenly they weren't there anymore. And I know I kissed my mother and they lowered her head. And then I had to get on with telling the rest of the family carrying on with the rest of our lives. The other lady we weren't so intimately connected with, so it was just being with her when she died. I tried to pray with her when she was dying. And this is something the boys have developed. They've asked me what prayers I would like to hear. I have this book, which is a sort of condensed book of the church prayers, morning mass and evening. So normally I read them, and I said I would like to hear them, you know, if I'm not up to reading them myself. I'd quite like to hear them read. So they've made notes like this. And they've also asked me what music I'd like. I think, having gone through death with their father, they felt so helpless. They wanted to do something for him. And I think I actually, the first time I met you, I said, I want help with people who are in the process of dying. Mm. And no one seems to be taking up that battle.
So have you laid your wishes out? Have you said you would like to die at home? What exactly have...
We had a most wonderful hospice lady come over. She had what she called a respect form. Have you come across
yes,
that?
I have.
You know, it's a box-ticking of affair to I want to die at home or in hospital or in the hospice. And in which order of priority, of course, because it's not always your choice.
But the plan is for you to die at home, if possible, with the hospice care.
That's right, yes. And they've promised they will. And they gave me 40 minutes reflexology the other day.
Oh, how lovely.
It was. I wanted to bring her home, but she wouldn't come. Oh, it was so soothing. And then Peter, who you've met, he doesn't do reflexology or anything like that, but he did a lot of foot rubbing and semi-massaging, which was very soothing.
So is this part of your plan, that you want those kinds of things in the lead up to your death?
If they're there, I will accept them gratefully. Evidently, I can have 6 reflexologists. I've had one, and I've got 2 more booked, I think. Andy's very keen I should have baths. I haven't had baths for years. And it still doesn't appeal to me. I've always done a shower. But we're having a hospice visit soon. It might even be this Wednesday. To see about some aids. So I'm hoping they'll manage to find something to help me to get in and out of the bath, which at the moment is becoming a problem.
I think you're quite remarkable for 89, if I may say so.
That's very kind of you.
It's wonderful to hear someone who's facing the end of their life with such equanimity, really. And you seem so content, almost.
What else can you do? You can't fight it. I mean, with all the pills in the world, even if they keep you going, what are you going to do with your life? Jock and I always went on holiday together. He's gone now, so I can't do that. And there's no one else I want to go with. Not even the boys, though that would do, if you see what I mean. And I'd enjoy it with them, I know. Part of going with Jock was his planning. He was an amazing planner. He took us by train and public transport from Straits Road down there to Malta.
Wow.
Bus to Staines, train to Waterloo, Waterloo to Calais, to Paris, and then we went to Venice, and then we went from Rome, and they put the train on the boat, which was very exciting, to go from Italy into Sicily. And then we stayed in Sicily, and then finally took the ferry from Sicily to Malta. And my father is actually buried in Malta, so I have this connection there. Over the years, I've been 2 or 3 times. Now, Jock planned all that.
What a trip.
It was. It was fantastic. It was really good. And it's all been fun. So I've been so, so lucky, so blessed.
I must say it's wonderful to meet someone who's so happy with their lot.
Well, I can't complain, can I? I've got nothing to complain about.
Wonderful to hear. Thank you, Hazel, so much for talking to me.
Well, you're doing a wonderful job. I would like to think that it did help someone, and to look forward with hope and love, and above all with love for everyone. There used to be a Violet Elizabeth in the Just William books. Love is all, she used to sing. Love it all, love it all, love it all. But actually, love is all. So sometimes it's good to hold on to that.
Thank you again. It's been a real honour to meet you and to know you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the trouble.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.